the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, it is that time of the year when you start thinking about tax planning. There's just about 3 or 4 weeks left, but this year tax planning is going to be a little different because the tax laws could be changed in major ways. Joining me on the program is Kim Fischera. He's a tax CPA. Kim, let's talk about the things that you normally advise your clients to do this time of the year, which is year-end tax planning, the typical things you do. And then let's talk about what you might want to consider, given the fact that we are going to likely see the biggest tax change since Ronald Reagan was president in 1986.
Well, hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on the program. Generally, what we do at year-end is we meet with clients, and typically we try to defer income and accelerate deductions. So that means pushing income into future years and taking more deductions in the current year. Now, with the new tax proposals that are out there, that may change some of that strategy, especially if tax rates go down in future years. We may still want to defer the income into those years. But there are a number of things that are going to change in regard to what we can deduct. So the planning that we do currently under the current law is to take advantage of any expenses that we can focus into this particular fiscal year, things such as bunching up medical expenses if somebody take most of their medical expenses in 1 year versus spreading them out, sometimes prepaying property taxes, accelerating charitable contributions, making sure we've captured all of the business. If somebody's a small business owner, we spend a lot of time looking at buying equipment, what can be expensed or, you know, through bonus depreciation, what types of expenses can be incurred for things that are needed in the business. So that's some of the general planning that we do. We also look at retirement planning, what can be done in the way of SEP IRAs or individual 401ks or just traditional IRAs if people are eligible.
You know, one thing that comes to mind, Kim, is towards the end of the year, you might want to look at, let's say, if you've taken capital gains or if you own mutual funds by law have to distribute their capital gains. I think it's after October and November that they send them out. So let's talk about tax harvesting and what you might want to do to offset it. So for example, if you had capital gains coming from a stock you sold or a mutual fund, maybe taking a look at something in the portfolio that you can use to offset it. And then also talk about the 30-day rule in order to maintain the deduction.
Well, I always recommend that clients meet with their investment advisors, especially if they have a large portfolio, and do just that. You know, if they've got large capital gains and they've got stocks or securities that they've been holding for a long time that they have these unrealized losses, you know, now is the time to take them, whether it's short or long term. It's always good to net these things out. Now, one of the things you can get in trouble about is a wash sale rule. Basically says you cannot take a loss on a position and then rebuy it within 30 days or else you can't take the loss. So you have to understand those rules. But most investment advisors are familiar with that. And, it's a good idea for clients to spend a little time before the end of the year with their advisor and make sure they understand the nature of their portfolio, what the unrealized gains and losses are, and what the potential benefits could be by offsetting these losses against the gains.
And Kim, typically, as you talk about, you try to accelerate deductions. For example, in California, you can pay your property taxes twice a year. You pay them in November and you pay them in April. Let's talk about why that might be better to pay them this year if they do away under this tax bill, or if they do away, let's say, with property taxes and state tax deductions. Those deductions are going to be worth more in 2017. Because in 2018, they go away.
Yeah, that's correct. That seems to be something that both parties agree on. And so we are advising clients to prepay property taxes. We're also advising clients to even prepay their California income taxes, if it makes sense. However, there's a caveat to that. If somebody is subject to alternative minimum tax, and many of my clients are, then unfortunately, they don't really get the benefit, particularly on the federal return. We don't have much problem with the California alternative minimum tax. But on the federal return, if somebody prepays their real estate taxes and their state income taxes, and they're subject to alternative minimum tax, it makes no change on the tax return. Now, if they prepay the real estate taxes and they're still subject to alternative minimum tax on the federal return and get no benefit, they will still get a deduction on their California return for the real estate taxes. So that is something to look at, and part of the time we can take the benefit, the other part of the time we can't. But one of the good things about this new proposal is they are planning, at least I think the House is planning to repeal the alternative minimum tax in the future. But then you're not going to be able to deduct your state income taxes anyway. And I think only up to $10,000 of real estate taxes, depending how this thing washes out.
Now, you know, we saw a lot of this in 1986. They did away with tax shelters, deductions, they lowered tax rates. And then, of course, later on, they raised the tax rates. So right now, they're proposing doing away with all itemized deductions. Let's talk about, is it really going to be as simple to file your tax returns is being proposed? Because they show this postcard, you know, basically what money did you earn? Did you make any charitable deductions? If not, the tax you owe. Is it really going to be that simple?
Well, there's a little truth to it, but, you know, tax law is never simple. I don't care what they do, because there's a lot of other elements that are involved with it. But one area that is going to be affected is this whole idea of increasing the standard deduction to, I think, $24,000 for married. And I think it's $12,000 for a single person, $24,000 for married individuals. But that's going to eliminate a whole group of people from needing to itemize deductions. If you couple the increase of the standard deduction with the elimination of some of the other itemized deductions, like state income taxes, you know, a lot of the real estate taxes, part of the home mortgage interest could be eliminated. There's a proposal in the House to eliminate medical expenses, which is ridiculous, but, you know, that's going to hurt a lot of elderly people that are sick. They're eliminating the miscellaneous itemized deductions like tax prep fees, investment advisory fees, employee business expenses. So it's going to create a large group of people that will not need itemized. The good aspect of this, from my perspective, is that it's going to simplify some of the messy part of preparing a tax return. Some of the messy aspects of a tax return are gathering receipts and data and coming up with proper deductions for clients. But it's not going to take away the other very sophisticated aspect of reporting income from businesses, from pass-through entities, from rental properties, from the activity and investment portfolio. All that stuff's still going to be out there. But, you know, I can't really tell you how this is going to come out just because it's still somewhat new. But I can just see a large number of my clients not itemizing deductions anymore. So then, you know, we can focus on more of the other important aspects of the tax return, like I mentioned, and not spend all this time trying to dig up receipts for meals and entertainment, that sort of thing.
Now, one of the advantages, they're talking about lowering the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%. So if you're IBM, Microsoft, Apple, that's going to help on corporate earnings. But another aspect that they're talking that it can help a lot of small businesses, and let's talk about that. And that is lowering the pass-through rate on subchapter S and partnerships. Can you explain for our listeners, Kim, exactly how that works and what would be the benefit?
When somebody has pass-through income from a partnership or an S corporation, it's basically taxed at the ordinary rate. So if somebody's in a high tax bracket, they're taxed at 39.6% on that. So the benefit that's being proposed is that the tax on this particular active business income will be taxed at a lower rate, let's say 25%. I think that's the House proposal. And I think the Senate has some other convoluted way of getting to it by getting a deduction or something against the income. But the idea is to isolate that income and tax it at a lower rate. However, it only really applies to, I think, active business income. I'm not sure if it's going to apply to passive flow through. I'm not sure about that yet. And the other caveat in here, too, is that if somebody is, let's just say I'm an accountant, and let's say I have an S corporation, and I'm generating X amount of dollars, my S corp that flows onto my personal individual return. If I'm a service professional, like an accountant, or an engineer, or a consultant, or a doctor, the IRS is not going to let me use this lower bracket for that type of income because they consider that earnings. So there are some issues with regard to how that's going to flow through. It may not benefit the service professionals as much because a portion of their income has to be treated as earned income, similar to wages, and the government's going to want that to be taxed at the higher tax brackets.
And let's just take something for an example. Let's say that I'm Larry Lots of Bucks. I have a business. I make $1 million a year. I pay myself a salary of, I don't know, $25,000 a month, let's say $300,000 a year. And then the rest is $700,000 of profits. Can you contrast and say what would be the difference? Let's say the $1 million would normally put me in a 39.6% tax bracket, 10.3 in the state of California. But under this new law, Kim, would the $300,000 be taxed at 39.6 and the $700,000 be taxed at 25% pass-through rate? Is that the way this would work?
That's the general concept. But I can see what's going to happen is you're going to have business owners that want to pay themselves, you know, $50,000 in salary and take $950 as blow-through income, and that's not going to fly. There's going to be some controversial issues there. So I think what it'll boil down to is that the owner is going to need to take a reasonable salary, and how do you define that? So the owner will have to take a reasonable salary subject to that higher tax bracket, and the rest of it theoretically would be subject to the 25% bracket or whatever, you know, Congress comes up with when they settle this whole thing.
So that definitely would be a substantial savings for a lot of small businesses, because if you take, let's say, a 25% tax rate versus, let's round it off, a 40% tax rate, that's a 15% tax rate savings. That's substantial.
No, it could be very substantial, and it would be a great boon for small businesses that are flow-through businesses. It's also going to be a benefit to the C corporations, you know, the corps that don't flow through. If that rate goes down as well, it'll make C corps more attractive. I mean, historically, over the last 20, 30 years, S corps have been the preferred way to do business as a small business, just because of the flow-through element and the single level of tax if they ever sell it, that sort of thing. But the reduction of taxes on C corps could also start to make those a little more attractive as well. I think the whole concept behind it is, you know, reducing these corporate tax rates will allow more money available to pay higher salaries, and this whole trickle-down concept, if that happens. It doesn't tend to trickle down the way it's supposed to, though. So that's the controversial issue about it all.
So basically, we've got a couple things. They're doing away with deductions, and hopefully they're going to lower the tax rates. Kim, have you been doing any tax planning with, let's say, your clients in California and taking a look at being a high tax state and also a state where the cost of living is very high, very similar to what people are experiencing if you live in New York, you live in New Jersey? Have you done any tax planning to see what the differences would be? Have you found taxes go down, taxes go up? Because you hear so many stories in the media that this is a tax increase on the middle class. You hear it from the other side that this is a big tax break. What have you found when you look at the numbers with your clients?
I haven't done a lot of it, to be honest with you, but the few that I have looked at, it's a mixed bag, and I really can't, I'm not definitive on how this is really going to affect everybody just yet, because there's so many moving parts to it. So, you know, I can't say that it's a big tax hit on the middle class just yet, or it's a big boon to the world. You know, it's hard to say, because I've got some wealthy clients that are going to pay more taxes as a result of this. And for those lower income clients that really can barely itemize now, they're going to get a big benefit if they can double the standard deduction and take some of those benefits. So it's really hard to say. You know, when these new tax laws come out and they're kicking them around in Congress, I mean, I look at them and I try to stay familiar with where it's going, but, you know, I never really committed to memory or get deeply ingrained in it until it's law, just because there's still going to be changes with this as well, because there's some things both parties are disagreeing on, and it'll be interesting to see if they can wrap it up before Christmas like they're talking about. But, you know, it keeps me employed, I'll tell you that. It's going to ramp up the information we have to gather in these tax seminars we take. And as soon as this is finalized, we'll get software updates in our planning software so we can play all the what-if calculations and let people know exactly what the differences are. But right now it's speculation. You know, I can manually rough a few things out, but it's hard to know. But, you know, there are some good things in here and there's some bad things. I think it's a matter of where you sit, what your situation is.
Yeah, what really strikes me is this is a tax bill that affects people in so many different ways. I mean, if you live in California and New York, you're going to be affected differently versus if you live in, let's say, Nevada, Texas, or Florida, where you don't pay state income taxes and usually the cost of living is cheaper. So if you live along the coast, either on the West Coast or East Coast, where the cost of living is high, property prices are high, obviously you're going to be impacted much differently than, let's say, somebody that lives in Florida.
Yeah, those folks with high state income taxes, high property taxes, like California, New York, some of the states you mentioned, they're probably going to have a tax increase. I can see it. The other thing that people may not be thinking about is that this could negatively impact the real estate market, particularly if mortgage interest is limited. Now, I mean, right now you can deduct interest on up to $1 million loan. The House is proposing that drop down to $500,000. There aren't too many people in California with loans much below $500,000 anymore. And I think they're eliminating the equity interest loans, which a lot of people take advantage of. So that could impact the real estate industry. So you might have lobbyists fighting this stuff because of that. Charitable organizations depend on contributions to fund these programs. And if people are getting a huge standard deduction now and their moderate charitable contributions aren't exceeding it, they may not contribute as much, you know, so then what does that mean? You know, and what concerns me too is Congress didn't spend, I don't think they spent enough time really going through this. They just want to ram this stuff through. And, you know, nobody's really going to know how this affects the population until it's in place and we start seeing the results.
I've seen several real estate shows and they've been talking about this. And one of the things they said, Kim, is number one, they're going to limit the mortgage deduction from, let's say, $1 million to $500,000. So, I mean, in California, you know, the average home here could run $1 million. In San Francisco, the median price is $1.4 million. So there's that. And if you're Larry Lots of Bucks and you have a very expensive home in California where you can't deduct the property taxes or state taxes, you know, you may see there was an article that came out in the Wall Street Journal by Goldman Sachs talking about you could see a major exodus that could impact high-end property as the Larry Lots of Bucks in this world decide they want to move elsewhere.
Yeah. No, that could happen, and it could hurt the real estate market to some degree. I mean, I'm not an expert in real estate, but I see the writing on the wall. And I think one of the proposals also is to eliminate the mortgage on a second home. You know, for those people that don't have $1 million mortgages, but maybe they have a second home if they're in a moderate area, they might have two moderately priced homes in some place outside of California, under $1 million in total debt on both of them. And they're not going to be able to deduct the mortgage interest on the second home. That's part of one. I think the House proposed that. I'm not sure which one, but I think that's in the bill as well. So there's a lot of implications here that could not be good for real estate.
Kim, something else I read, too, is they would impact the holding rate for capital gains and also the holding rate for real estate profits from selling a primary residence. Do you know anything about that? Because it was sort of buried in the bill and it came out. And what they're talking about in terms of residential homes, you would have to live in it 5 out of the most recent 5 years. And they're talking about extending the holding period for capital gains. So obviously that's going to affect the stock market as well as the real estate market.
Yeah, I'm not up on the capital gain holding periods, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, under current law, you just have to live in your primary residence for 2 out of 5 years. And I think they pushed that up to what, maybe 5 out of 8 or something like that. But I do know that's on the drawing board.
So overall, in terms of tax planning, and this is always important every single year, regardless of a tax law change, if you can accelerate your deductions into 1 year, obviously saving a tax dollar today makes a lot more sense than saving a tax dollar, let's say, a year later. So you would still recommend doing that. And given the change of possibility of losing itemized deductions, it makes more sense to do that this year.
Yes, it does. Now, there might be a couple little minor things to consider. One of the proposals that's in here affects for business that wants to buy a vehicle in the company. Under current law, if you buy, let's say you buy a high-end vehicle, the depreciation or the bonus depreciation on that is limited to about $3,160, I think, in the first year. And in this proposal, I think they're going to increase that to $10,000 in the first year, $16,000 in the second. What that means is if you're going to buy some high-end vehicle for your business, you may want to wait till January to buy it. Because one of the things that the House and the Senate are proposing is these higher bonus depreciation rates, higher Section 179 deductions. I mean, they're pushing this up to, I think, a couple million. So the limits are huge now. You can write off more of your equipment. But the thing that jumps out at me here is this benefit for vehicles, because ever since Reagan had limited or put caps on what you can expense on vehicles that are used in a business, this is a huge increase for that. You know, $10,000 first year, $16,000 second year, I think $96,000 in the third year. So, you know, normally we're just writing off vehicles in this at this anemic rate gradually, you know, a few thousand a year. Somebody might have a $60,000 car in there. It takes forever. So this is one area where you may want to purchase your business vehicle in 2018.
So it seems like to me, as I look at this tax bill overall, a lot of the benefits of this tax bill, and this is maybe part of the economic objective, is to really make it profitable for businesses. So we know that major corporations have trillions of dollars of untaxed profits overseas. So if you lower the tax rates here in the U.S. and make us more competitive with the rest of the world, hopefully that brings money back here. But it seems like overall, Kim, as I look at this bill, the overall majority of benefits are going to corporations and companies with the hopes that this would stimulate economic growth.
You know, as I gradually wrap my head around it, that seems to be right. There's a lot of incentives for small businesses with, like I mentioned, there's several kinds of depreciation. There's a bonus depreciation that they're proposing, 100% bonus depreciation on equipment. Then there's a Section 179 expensing election that you take that allows you, again, to expense equipment. And that's proposed to go up to $2 million, you know, limits of up to $2 million. Just to give you a contrast, the limit for California under the Section 179 expensing deduction is only $25,000. And the feds are proposing $2 million. That's the disparity there. So, yeah, there are a lot of incentives for businesses to encourage economic growth with the hope that the benefits flow down to the average person. You know, tax law is so convolutedly complicated and wrapped in with so many social programs that it's really hard to understand the results until it's been on the books for a few years.
So, Kim, if we were to sum up right now, I would say it's pretty fairly easy to say, if you have deductions, whether they're medical deductions, property tax deductions, state tax deductions, miscellaneous deductions, they're going to mean much more to you this year, assuming this tax bill gets passed, where next year you're not going to be able to itemize. Is that fairly clear to say and advise individuals that they may want to do that?
Yeah, that's very clear. And I've been telling people that because, again, even if you're subject to alternative minimum tax and you don't get the full benefit on your federal return for some of these miscellaneous deductions and property taxes, you're still going to get them on your California return, which is, you know, at least 9.6% for most people. So it does behoove you to take those deductions this year. And, you know, and maybe you defer some of your huge business expenses if you need to use some of the bonus depreciation and that sort of thing into 2018. So, yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it.
And another thing I think you would advise, especially around this time of the year, with so many tax law changes or a change of this magnitude going into effect, you would recommend that they meet with their advisor because there are a lot of things that could impact you in positive or negative ways now.
I like a team approach when I work with my clients. I really like to be plugged into the investment advisor plus myself. Sometimes an estate planning attorney is part of the package too. Many of my clients have investment portfolios. And I'm not an investment advisor, and neither is the investment advisor a tax professional. So it's always a good idea for the client to bring both of those parties together and come up with the best solutions for tax planning.
That's something we haven't even talked about here, because on both sides of the bill, when it comes to estate taxes, they want to increase the exemption to $11 million. So for a husband and wife, you know, that's $22 million that you can pass on to your heirs without any estate taxes. And for many small businesses, whether you're ranchers, you're into agriculture, or the business itself is the major asset, or you own a lot of real estate, Kim, this is significant, and it bears in mind you should be doing some planning with your advisor.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, right now, I think the exemption is, it's probably $11 million for a married couple right now. Yeah, that's at least double that, and I think one of the proposals is to completely eliminate it. So this is a huge benefit to that top 1% of the ultra wealthy. Yeah, that's really where this benefit's going. This isn't helping the average Joe, but this is preserving these huge estates to pass from family to family. And you can make your own call on how you feel about all that. But that's the benefit of the elimination of the estate tax. And right now, you know, even at the $11 million exemption level for married couples, and most of my clients aren't even subject to estate taxes right now, based on my practice. So if they double that or eliminate it, it's going to benefit those huge estates that are going to save a lot of money. So that's a big impact.
So, as we sum up, Kim, I guess a couple of things. Accelerate deductions into this year. If you're a business, you might want to wait to next year to make any major equipment purchases, whether it's car, machines, or equipment. And overall, it may behoove you to talk to your advisor to see what kind of planning changes you should be doing this year versus next year.
Yeah, that about sums it up. And again, for business expenses, I don't want to make a blanket call that people should defer expensing or buying things till next year. They should meet with their CPA and discuss it, because even right now, there's some pretty healthy expense limitations. You can still write off quite a bit of your equipment right now. I think it's up to $500,000. I'm talking about vehicles particularly. There's a huge change there. And then if you're going to buy, millions of dollars of equipment, then you might want to consider the benefits of doing it next year.
All right, Kim, if somebody would like to contact you in California for, let's say, tax planning, how could they get a hold of you?
Well, our phone number is 760-431-1220. But I do want to say we're not really taking a lot of new business after January 1st. We kind of shut that down until after tax season's over. So we're selectively meeting with potential new clients. But if I don't hear from them till before the end of the year, we won't be able to meet until after tax season.
Well, it gets pretty busy, and I suspect that I just have a feeling, Kim, by the end of the year, we're going to be looking at a new tax regime that's going to be put into place. So 2018 could be a busy year for many people, but the one thing to do is talk to your advisor now. Kim, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. All the best to you, and happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you, Jim, and thank you for having me on the show.
Well, that concludes my interview with Kim Fischera. I think one of the most important things, depending on where you live, especially if you live in those high tax states, New York, New Jersey, living here in California, you may want to get together with your tax advisor, because those deductions could be worth a whole lot more this year. And considering if you run a small business, what you might want to be doing to take advantage of these new pass-through rates. A lot of stuff is going to be changing, and we haven't seen anything of this significance since 1986. This is going to affect real estate, the markets, and so much more. We'll be here to talk about it. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.